From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
I didn't know half of it. I didn't know a quarter of it, how it really worked, what really happened, or how it was formed, or what it meant, you know. I'm really fortunate. I have a job where you almost, even if you don't want to, you have to learn something. It's like if you say, I don't want to know anything else in the world. I know enough. I don't want to. You can't help it. You open a script and start reading things. You know, it's kind of a great thing about the job.
For Dope Sick star Michael Keaton, like all of us, he was aware of the opioid crisis, but the Hulu limited series taught him a lot more about the origins of the tragedy and the actions of the Sackler family that caused so much misery. I'm Michael Schneider, and on this bonus episode of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast, we talk to Michael Keaton about Dope Sick, as well as, yes, what it's like to return to that Batman suit. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Creator Danny Strong adapted Beth Macy's 2018 nonfiction book Dope Sick to create the Hulu streaming series of the same name. The limited series, starring Michael Keaton and Caitlin Dever, has its roots in a real-life crime story, the introduction and marketing of the highly addictive painkiller OxyContin. It toggles between timelines to show the rise of Richard Sackler within Purdue Pharma, the family-run manufacturer of OxyContin, and the attempt by justice officials to curtail the company's deceptive marketing practice as the drug infiltrates an Appalachian coal mining community. Keaton plays Samuel Phoenix, an old-school doctor from a small mining town in Virginia who begins prescribing his patients OxyContin to relieve pain, but even he's not eventually immune to addiction.
Does the exact opposite of what connection does, right? Addiction tears apart. Tears apart friendships. Tears apart marriages. It'll tear apart a family. Tear apart a whole community. Part of the reason we relapse is because of pain. There's some kind of pain that's in a lot of us, or all of us. We just don't want to feel anymore. And the further we fall into addiction, pain says to us, hell, we'd be better off just feeling nothing at all. So we go numb. And our souls go numb. Now we've got a real problem. You know, pain is just pain. Not good, not bad. Just part of being a human being. And sometimes good can come out of it. If we're brave enough and willing to go a little deeper, work our way through it, try to overcome it, well, we just might find our better selves.
I recently spoke with Keaton about Dope Sick and what went into this powerful series.
Well, I remember going back to when you did Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and you read some of that Sackler testimony. That was before you had signed up for this, right? That was sort of like almost a prelude to you doing Dope Sick.
Yeah, I know. Coincidentally, right. I was working on, I think, Worth, or I was doing SNL. I think I was doing Worth. I can't remember. And they called and asked if I would do it. And I'm a fan of the show and John Oliver's. And I ran over and did it. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. So I was aware of the story. I was aware of the case or situation.
That crazy testimony. I mean, the ridiculous Richard Sackler testimony. You were already aware. So in some ways, you were perfectly prepped for this when they came to you. I assume when Danny Strong came to you and told you more about this project. Tell me how that all kind of came about.
You would think I was, but I wasn't. Because there was and is so much more to it, obviously. Danny, I'm working with Jay Roach and some other folks on a project, and we're talking to Danny. I said I might be doing this thing with Danny Strong, and he He gave a strong seal of approval. We talked about it, but I'd said, I'm getting this thing I read and writing's really good. And then Danny and I talked and really, honestly, I mean, yes, I cared about the subject matter a lot. Thought it was, important with, that can sound pretentious, but it is an important issue.
Oh yeah.
Not only just the SACRA situation and the opioid crisis, but big pharma, and all that. So I think I'm fortunate in my occupation that I get to do what I like to do and have the opportunity to move people in certain ways that sometimes might make a difference. I mean, most people aren't fortunate enough to have a job like that. I am. So there was that, but basically it was just something that was really well written and an opportunity to play a character for over 8 episodes instead of just, hoping you get it right in 2 hours,
Yeah. I mean, what for you in sort of, in spending more time on a project like this, how much more prep goes into doing, a series like this, as opposed to the kind of prep that you normally do for a 2-hour film?
I don't know if there's more prep in that regard. There's more to consider just because of the logistics of things or how things are shot or how things are going to play out over a longer period of time, maybe, literally time in your life and how you're going to stay consistent with the character, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, it's just a different rhythm. But mostly it was just for me because it was truncated. My schedule was, because it had to be, it made it more difficult, but in weird ways, it kind of made it easier. You just kind of had it ended up kind of being like a movie shoot anyway, especially the first couple episodes with Barry Levinson.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet. Obviously bringing that movie style to it. And also you're a busy guy these days. I assume you were probably juggling a couple of things at the same time or how did this sort of work into your schedule given all that you've been doing these days?
Well, they helped the production. I mean, I was, I'm an exec producer, but it was really dependent. I couldn't call the shots in terms of saying, well, here's how my schedule is going to work. I kind of said, hey, here's what I have to be somewhere to shoot another project. And I can't jump from one thing to another. And I basically, for me, did, but I needed a few weeks just to settle down, get organized, et cetera, and take a minute to before I start something else. And so they were nice enough to say, okay, let us figure out a schedule for you. And then they did. And then that schedule, from an acting point of view, made things, but I knew this would happen, made things, made the job, the degree of difficulty went up, but that's okay. There was no choice. It was either that or say, boy, I like this, but I really, it doesn't work for me right now. It did work for me if they could make that work, and they did.
Yeah. And obviously there's so much going on in Dope Sick, so many different stories, so many different timelines. This must have been a really interesting thing, especially for the powers that be, to kind of figure out how to shoot this with the different timelines. And they do a really good job, by the way, I love the device that they use with the rolling dates to sort of help us along as we're watching. But really interesting to see sort of playing with time to tell this story. And it seems pretty effective.
Really, they did a really good job, I think. And that's Danny's really good at keeping all of that in his head and not panicking and kind of, he would tell me, would talk, and he had it very, very, very well thought out. But at the same time, there are certain things that he wasn't quite sure. You never have all your bases covered in these things. So he sometimes would say, yeah, I don't know, I haven't figured that out yet. But he had supreme confidence that he would, and he always did. And I guess we did, but mostly he did. But I think the production really did a good job of engaging everyone. I thought the editing was wonderful in this, and things were set up properly and really easy to understand. There's some dense stuff here trying to explain how the Sackler family worked and Purdue Pharma and Big Pharma and how all that really works, and make people understand, and then carry the timelines and the all the characters' storylines along so that everyone not only could follow but stayed really engaged.
Yeah. And there are moments where the characters sort of, I think, explain things that we're all wondering and thinking about that sort of come up when you hear about Purdue Pharma. One of my favorite moments is when James Comey thinks they're talking about Purdue Farms, the chicken people. And the fact they managed to just like sneak that in, so we're all aware, no, this is a totally different Purdue.
Right. Which is true, by the way, actually happened.
Which is crazy. I gotta say, like, you know, I've learned quite a bit. I mean, we've all sort of like been aware of the opioid crisis, OxyContin. We knew the Sacklers a little bit. Again, like I mentioned, I saw, you know, that episode of Last Week Tonight and read the stories. But there's something about the way this story is told in Dopesick that I really like. I feel like I have a better understanding now of that family, of what they did, of their denials. And how much do you feel like you learned by doing this project? What did you know about this family, this story, versus after you started working on this? Did you sort of learn personally?
Tons. I always compare this to, well, this happens a lot though. Just what you said, I think most people, I'm certainly like you, and I think most people are like you, you know, if you're aware at all, you know things, and then you think, yeah, that's right, I understand that. And then you realize you don't really know much at all. The same thing that happened on when we were doing Worth, you know, I was aware of the fund and there was this thing and blah, blah, blah. I didn't know half of it. I didn't know a quarter of it, how it really worked, what really happened or how it was formed or what it meant. You know, what I'd forgotten all about the airline industry and whatever. You know, if that went down, what was going to happen? I never really probably thought about it that much. You know, when I did The Founder, you know, there were all of these stories about how McDonald's was started, you know, and kind of these folksy, like old wives tales about it. And I guess I kind of was one of those people who thought, yeah, like something like that probably happened. And that's how it got started. Then it became, I didn't even know there were McDonald's brothers. Right. And so,
or milkshake machines, right? That whole milkshake machine.
Right. And you know, I'm really fortunate. I have a job where you almost, even if you don't want to, you have to learn something. It's like if you say, I know, I don't want to know anything else in the world. I know enough. I don't want to, you can't help it. You open a script and start reading things. You know, it's kind of a great thing about the job. And so in this case, no, I didn't know that much. I knew about the Sacklers. You know, I read a lot of newspapers. I watch a lot of the news. And you know, I pay attention to things. But I didn't know, I didn't even know probably an eighth of it, you know. And even as we were doing it, every day I was learning something new.
Well, timing is everything. And of course, the fact that there was that settlement that took place in September, right before you guys launched the show, what did you think of that? It's obviously a controversial, you know, that Purdue Pharma is no more, but the family has no liability whatsoever. They're absolved. They can keep their billions of dollars. What did you think of that?
Well, I hate it. And at the same time, I look at it differently. I look at it with, you know, on an emotional level, you kind of can't believe it. And on the other hand, you go, well, of course that's what's going to happen. Of course that's how it's going to work. You know what I mean? And in a cynical way, but in just an honest way, you go, oh, I see. Yeah, here we go again. And that's what's going to happen. And it kind of drives you crazy. Now, I'm not sure all that, where that stands right now, because the last I heard, they said, yeah, you know, in terms of the decision to say, once we pay this, we can never be held accountable again or be taken to court for anything pertaining to, and I'm obviously kind of generalizing and paraphrasing here, and any kind of pharmaceutical lawsuits or something like that. I think they did in the end win that, but there was a hiccup in that, as I recall, where a judge said, wait, I'm not so sure that's gonna happen that just like that here. But I think the final decision was they mostly won that. So what I thought about it was I hate it. On the other hand, I went, yeah, this is what's gonna kind of happen. And you know, money talks and power talks. And when you can hire the best, you know, and you know, as we were talking about today, this is like the micro, it's a big micro of the macro, you know, big pharma of inequity. So we're looking at this one story. There's a lot of this, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of this. And that's why you're not surprised sometimes why people, you know, I mean, they have an emotional reaction to attorneys and lawyers. They kind of blame them, but the whole legal system, you know, and the inequity often. It's a great scene where they, in Dope Sick, where they're about to settle and you realize, well, you know, I can see why people in this town would say, well, you know what? We got a little victory and some people are going to be helped by this. So, okay, we'll take $100,000 or whatever. And then, you know, Beth says, nah, I don't think so. You know, I'm not going to be part of this. This is we're going for, this won't do it. I don't want to give too much away in the scene, but, and that's huge. You know, that took some real guts. So, you know, you hate it. And at the same time, you realize that's how it works and it drives you even crazier when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, we get a little education in Dope Sick about how the DEA was gutted years ago during the Reagan administration. Basically pharma, big pharma self-regulates for the most part. And
yeah,
there's a moment where the Purdue folks are talking about entering the German market and they're like, actually, yes. No, Germany actually has regulations. It's not going to be a cakewalk the way it was in the United States. So.
Yeah, there was a thing on this morning. I was watching television, watching one of the cable news shows and cable talk shows, I guess. And you know, they were just talking about this. We're just talking about you know, OxyContin in this case, which is all, you know, there's that. And then they were just talking about basically. And I'm not being dramatic, or the price gouging by pharmaceutical companies. You know, the costs right now, and it's getting worse. You know, they were using the cost of insulin as an example. It's huge now, and in Canada it is not, in the UK it is not, and you have to say, you know, something has to be done. You know, with the healthcare system, it just does. I mean, I'm a fortunate guy. I go, man, it happens to me. I look at it when I go to the drugstore. I go, are you kidding me? But at the same time, I go, yep, okay, here. And I write them a check and I get it. And I'm fortunate that I can do it. There's a lot of people who can't do it. I honestly think, I don't know how many, many people get by. It's just unfair. And so, you know, I know there are a lot of people who scream, you know, we need government out of our lives. There's a lot of cases where you need government in your life.
After the break, more with Michael Keaton from Los Angeles. This is the Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. We're talking to Dope Sick star Michael Keaton, who plays small-town Dr. Samuel Finnix in the series, a look at the origins of the real-life opioid crisis. Through most of the series, Dr. Finnix is seen being courted by a Purdue salesman, played by Will Poulter, who convinces Dr. Finnix that OxyContin is essentially non-addictive by following the company's emotionally manipulative approach.
Well, I think another thing that Dope Sick does very well is depict the pharma reps, the folks who, you know, are romancing both the receptionists who are always bringing the flowers over and catering lunch for doctor's offices. Of course,
yeah.
Taking doctors like your character fishing or whatever they want to do, romancing them over trips, you know, all expense paid trips to Arizona. And you know, I think we've all, like, I've been to doctor's offices and I see these well-dressed people sitting there waiting patiently and
they all have a little black thing on rollers they're carrying around.
Right. And
those little travel bags.
And they have to, like, they said, they're like, we'd love to cater lunch. And the receptionist is like, well, we're being catered by, you know, this pharmaceutical company on Monday. Maybe we can get you in on Thursday. It's a crazy racket. And those are the scenes I think I kind of cringe the most when I'm watching Dope Sick.
For sure.
Because it's such a false relationship. And your character, like, he sees the bullshit. But at the same time, you know, he's... what are you going to do? This guy's relentless. Sure, fine. I'll go fishing with you. And then over time, he's just worn down by this guy.
Well, no, what really happens, though, is he's, first of all, he's very charmed by this guy because he's really charming. And he has that's why Will's so good in this. Will had to walk that fine line because he actually is a charming, well, Will is a charming guy. And then the character is a charming guy. He just is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They genuinely liked each other and you know, he didn't have a son like that. So he kind of had a son that he could, you know, a guy he could hang with and kind of be a son in a way. But also what happens to him is, and I think this happens with doctors, they don't know everything. He doesn't know everything. He was pretty naive. And if you really look at the beginning, he's very doubtful. He doesn't believe it. He says, no, this can't happen. And then he is won over. He's convinced that there is something to it. And then he's put in his position where he said, I think I can help somebody here. I have a case right in front of me with this young woman, but maybe they're right. Maybe I don't know everything. Maybe they're right. And that was the mistake. It's not that he says, well, maybe I'll just try, you know, he thinks about it long and hard.
And it does work at first for his patients. Yes. So he's kind of won over, and it's interesting. And this is what having a series allows you to do, is you can see it sort of
progress
over time. It feels earned at the point where he's finally all in because you've seen everything lead up to that. And yeah, that makes sense. It's worked for his patients.
Danny was wise that he turned down the opportunity to do this as a film. It's a 2-hour film, and said, no, I think this is a you know, episodic project.
And so talk about Dr. Phoenix, your character. You know, he's a decent man. He's got an interesting backstory, how he ended up in Appalachia. And I love that there's, like, we seem to, like, get to know this guy pretty quickly and who he is. And he's decent. He helps, when he helps Caitlin Dever's character, you know, he's sort of just a good guy. And this is sort of through no fault really of his own. He trusted the pharma. He trusted, like, the what he saw. And so how do you feel about this guy?
Well, he's a very, he has real nobility, actually. And he has extreme empathy. He was meant to be a doctor. He loves being a doctor. He loves being a guy in the community who people can rely on and look up to. He's respectful, extremely respectful. I'm trying not to give too much away. What happens to him happens to him, and happens to there are no real evil. Well, I'm sure there are, you know, some pretty horrific people who become addicts, but by and large, people just become addicts out of various situations. But, you know, this is, you know, he was a good example to use, because this is what happens, and it becomes a disease. And, you know, and I also, I'm proud of the fact that the project really treated people from that region with respect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I was curious if you, consulted with any, you know, either current addict or a sober addict, especially who.
No, a lot of that I did during Clean and Sober, and I retained a lot of that information. Yeah. And then I take all that information, I kind of break it down to the basics, and, you know, just say, okay, here's what the truth is. Here's what I know about this. And then you say, but then how does that apply to this person? You know, I mean, imagine the shame of this guy, you know, the shame a person that he would feel, you know, people respected me and trusted me, and, you know, now look at me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And this is sort of obviously this is an ongoing story. There are a lot of doctors out there who have gone on the record expressing their regret for prescribing OxyContin and for their experience with that. And I think some of them actually were used as an inspiration, in the original, in the book, and also for Danny in writing this
character. Yeah, Danny created this doctor really, based on two or three doctors, I think, Beth Macy's, from the book Dope Sick.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get a chance to talk to any of them, or what's?
No. I just kind of had a conversation with my doctor, and then, like I say, I knew a lot from Clean and Sober, I learned a lot from Clean and Sober, and yeah. I remembered a lot, when you read it, it's. You just say, oh, I see the story. I understand the story. If you understand the story and you understand the character, it's, there it is,
What's been the reaction? I mean, you heard my reaction, obviously. Like, I feel like I'm learning a lot from Dope Sick. Are you generally sort of getting that? Are you hearing from people who maybe have experienced this kind of addiction, either themselves or through family members?
The reaction is about as strong as anything I've ever been in, just in terms of the appreciation for it, just as a really high quality piece of work, but also how grateful they are that it's out there.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of people are saying things that you and I are saying, yeah, we were aware of it. We just weren't this aware of it. This is eye opening and moving. And then you'll hear, people are grateful and they'll give you, you'll read firsthand accounts and, how they were affected by it.
Well, you did the TV Critics Press Tour this summer, and one of my favorite moments from that panel was when Rosario Dawson referred to you as Michael, my forever Batman Keaton.
Yeah.
Which I think that's true for a lot of us, especially those of us who grew up with the 89 Batman. So got to ask you, how much convincing did it take to sign on to The Flash? What convinced you to do this and to bring it back?
It was kind of like way back in my, over the last few years, I was kind of curious, like inside myself, saying, wow, I wonder what that'd be like, or wonder if I could kind of, what if I had to do that again? Be interesting. And I was approached, and just because I was curious didn't mean I wanted to do it. So it took a long time, frankly, but it took a long time. One of the reasons it took a long time was they weren't sure when, it wasn't a go project yet, and when they could do it. And they still had to work out all the budget issues. And so there was a fair amount of me saying, well, I don't know, I'm gonna have to see something, and depends on when. And I'm not just going to say, yeah, I want to do it, so I'll do it. It has to be good. and it has to be, it has to be a reason. Then, kind of resurfaced after a long time. And I looked at it again. We had, kind of a half of a meeting again about it. And then, various conversations with the director and producers, and then mostly the director. He and I would exchange emails, and then I'd think about it for a while. And I'd say, and then I had suggestions and maybe ask certain questions. And he didn't have some answers right away. And then later he'd have some. Just a kind of, a process that took a while. So it was a fair amount of convincing, but it wasn't like you had to talk me into it exactly. It just, is this thing any good, but I was certainly inside my head over the last couple of years, kind of every now and then I'd be curious about it,
Do you
within myself to say, I wonder what that would be like.
When was the last time you went back and watched OG, the 89 Batman?
In 89.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
And your verdict so far? I mean, does it feel good? Were there butterflies? Was it just pure excitement?
Yeah, it was butterflies. It was honestly, it was fun. Really? That's the only word I can come up with. It's fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's very exciting. Very exciting. So, you know, we do live in this reboot culture now, right? I mean, you're seeing everything being remade. Is anything else from your past that you would consider revisiting, you know, years later? What's the continuation story of some of your classic films that you have kind of wondered? I wonder what that would be like to play that character again a couple decades later.
I'd like another shot at batting against Frankie Groznick as a kid growing up when I was 12. He struck me out three times in one game, and I'd like another shot at that one. That's one thing that's always kind of...
Maybe you can make that happen. Maybe we could televise that. We would get it on one of the streamers. By the way, that you just came up with a great idea for just a whole TV series.
Exactly.
Like celebrities going back and revisiting the thing that they want to, you know, revisit from their youth.
There actually was some there was a thing. Wait, what was this? Was it a movie or was it a television idea? Like you get to live out a something you always wanted to do, something like that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
All right, well, we'll go pitch it to Paramount Plus or something. So, or your pals at Hulu. Well, congratulations on Dope Sick. We're looking forward to The Flash and everything else going on. Anything else, by the way, that is coming up that you're excited about that you definitely want to keep on our radar as well?
I'm landscaping my yard, which is
pretty It's another show. You keep pitching me show ideas.
I know, that's right. Celebrity landscapers.
That's Michael Keaton, star of Dope Sick, now streaming on Hulu. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Clayton Davis, and Janelle Riley, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.